that is one effect and benefit that is really powerful to me, that it can help to shift relationship to pain and discomfort, even if it's just for a moment, to shift the focus, you know, away, that it can really be beneficial in recovery, you know, from disease, from injury, from emotional things, you know, anxiety and stress.
Welcome to the 20th episode and the final episode of the Ikivi Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Sarah Oster, sound therapist, meditation teacher, and author. She has spent the past decade introducing sound baths to diverse audiences and unique environments all across the world. Her work explores how sound and healing transform space, both physically and psychologically, for the purpose of creating connection and healing. In this episode, we speak with her about how sound healing works as a therapeutic and restorative practice, how it can help us navigate and heal emotional trauma, and how we can incorporate sound practices into our daily lives, and so much more. If you're curious about this space and want to learn more about this mindful practice, we hope you enjoy this lovely conversation. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. I am very excited to have this conversation with you. I myself have dabbled with meditation on and off for about maybe 6 years now. And I've seen a lot of peace that has come with it for me in different forms. But it's very, very difficult to practice and kind of get swept in different ways with life. But I'd love to hear about you and what sound healing is, because that's something that I've never done. And I'm excited to hear how this can kind of be added on into my practice. So my first question to you is, firstly, what is sound bath? And how does it work as a therapeutic and restorative practice for the mind and body?
Well, since you began with meditation, I'll begin with meditation and how sound healing and sound therapy can be connected to meditative practices. Now, with meditation, as you're familiar, there is always a point or multiple points of focus, whether you are reciting mantra or focusing on the breath or listening to the voice of someone guide your focus, or you're looking at a candle, right? These are all examples of different points of focus for meditation. So a lot of people find that challenging. It can put a lot of pressure on the practitioner to say, you must focus on this candle, you must focus on your breath, and it can feel challenging for people. And so sound, and in a sound bath, the sound can provide multiple points of focus to sort of entertain or charm or keep your mind occupied. And when it's done with this intention, when the sound is introduced and played with this intention, it can actually help to facilitate guiding you into a meditative and relaxed state. I mean, silence is a part of the experience too. And so typically in the sound baths that I facilitate, there is a guiding of awareness to become aware of the body, of the breath, of how you're listening. So it helps give people context as to what's going to happen. And then I would stop talking and stop guiding and begin to introduce different sounds. Now, your role as a sound bather practitioner is to simply keep guiding your attention back to the sound and back to your listening, because all of our minds will tend to be all over the place, and our to-do lists and all the things that all of us think about. But you keep gently guiding your awareness back to the sound. And then there is silence, and the silence is really like a settling. It's a moment of integration when things psychologically, emotionally, physically have a chance to reorganize in a sense. And settle. And so in that place, you might also be able to access a meditative state. Some people become so relaxed that they fall asleep after a sound bath. But then generally, depending on what happens next, it would guide people back out of the experience.
Mm-hmm. So you said earlier that this is a different form of meditation, like, you know, watching the flame of a candle or focusing on your breath and those kind of things. How is this different, and how is it, I wouldn't say better, but how is it, I don't know what you would say about it, but how is it different and how is it beneficial?
I think it can be more accessible to people. I think there are a lot of myths around meditation of having to, you know, sit a very particular way or hold your hands in mudra a particular way, or recite something that is foreign to you that you don't understand. But I feel that the simplicity of focusing on listening is more accessible to people. And in a mm-hmm. sound bath, generally people are invited to lie down to be comfortable. I feel that being able to have a comfortable posture in the body also makes a meditative experience more accessible to people, or not having to get on the floor. Mm-hmm. So I also work with a lot of people with disabilities or older people, or veterans, or, you know, people who are not comfortable lying flat on the floor or sitting in a cross-legged position, can sit in a chair, can sit on the couch, can be comfortable and still be able to access the benefits of the experience.
Before we get into it a little bit more, I'd love to hear how you got into sound healing and sound bathing and what your story is like.
Yeah, it's as most of our stories are, you know, begins at the beginning, which I'll kind of, you know, skip around, and it's kind of a pretty winding journey. But what I can say in reflection back is that music and sound have always played a very important role in my life, as a musician and an artist. And in my childhood, it was always a way that I connected with my family, through music and sound. And ultimately it became part of how I was able to express my emotions as an artist and as a musician. And then I began to draw the connections towards the healing aspects of sound and how it could impact me personally. So I suffered a pretty traumatic accident in my early 20s. I was working as an artist in New York City, and the floor collapsed of my studio.
Oh my God.
And I broke my back in four places. And before that, I mean, it is like kind of a a pretty dramatic moment, yes, but a moment that was really pivotal to guide me in a different direction. Before that, I had very little awareness of my own body and how I was caring for it until I was sort of forced to pay attention to it, need to get out of pain. And so it was at that time, which was about 20 years ago, when in New York City, it wasn't so easy to find acupuncture and things like that. It wasn't as mainstream, but I was looking and trying whatever I could get my hands on or whoever could put their hands on me. And then ultimately, I got to a place where I felt like, oh, I'm relying on all of these people, all of these amazing practitioners and healers who are putting their hands on me. But I feel like I need something that I can tap into and access on my own to feel a little bit more empowered in my own healing process and my own recovery. And so very reluctantly, I started trying yoga and trying meditation. And I was pretty skeptical and pretty resistant to the practice, to these communities that I didn't feel like I belonged. But I felt that these things were helping me in my body, helping me tap into a connection to the trauma of a sudden accident. And so it was through that practice that I started to really make the connection between my mind and my body and how important seeing those connections are in recovery and healing. And so I started teaching, but because I felt like it's, you kind of have to, right? Is once you make these revelations for yourself, or this is how I felt anyway, and this is how I feel kind of like all my best teachers are, is you can't help but share that knowledge with other people. You say, I was very skeptical too. I know you're rolling your eyes. That was me. I know, you know, and I felt like I had maybe had the ability to reach some people that were like me, and say, you know, these things can really be helpful. These are really powerful tools and they really helped me. And this is how they helped me. And that's kind of how it began. And I slowly started to integrate, sound back in to my offering as a teacher to make it even more accessible, to take it out of the yoga studio, actually. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was a barrier for entry. I need to wear a certain thing. I need to be able to touch my toes or do these crazy postures. And, you know, so I started to say, no, I think we can do this in other places. So that's when I started to offer sound experiences in art spaces, cultural institutions, in offices, in boardrooms, and just kind of bringing it to the people instead of kind of making the people come to it.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, the skepticism that people have is real. A lot of people, I think, have that roadblock a little bit because these kind of things take time to see results. And we're so used to this quick, you know, result-driven world that we live in that people want it quick and fast. I would love to hear what kind of benefits you felt that kept you going once you started kind of adopting meditation and mindfulness and, you know, understanding the connection between your mind and body.
I agree with you 100% that there is such a strong, intense desire to have everything fast and now. And there are certain things that just don't work like that, that are cumulative. And in this age when we can ask our devices a question and have, you know, 1,000 answers, it kind of can give us a false sense of knowing something. Mm-hmm. But when you read something given back to you by the computer, it's not a knowing, right? And so it has to come from this cumulative effort. You know, there's an inner knowing and an inner wisdom that I think maybe not enough people are tapping into because of exactly what you're saying. It takes time and it takes commitment, and it doesn't have to be hard, you know, and this is what many of my teachers have said to me that I share with my students, is it really has to be something that's accessible to you so that you can integrate it into your life so that you do it. Because that's the thing about these types of practices, is if you don't do it, then they don't work.
Yeah.
And it seems It seems like such a silly thing to say, but it's, and then that's why people often give the example of like working out, right? If you want to be fit or you want to build muscle or you want to lose weight, you don't just go to the gym one time and then you're done.
Yeah.
it's a lifestyle change. And so the same thing goes for emotional and mental health also. You know, we can't just assume that we download an app and because the meditation app is on our phone, it's affecting us.
Yeah.
You know, you have to show up and do your part and participate.
What are some of these benefits that people can see by practicing sound bathing and healing?
I think the thing that for me that I witness in other people in the effects and benefits of sound baths is the effects can be almost immediate. That after one experience, whether it's 5 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour, people are able to kind of taste, you know, what a meditative state might feel like. And then they say, wow, I never felt that before. Or I was somewhere else. I didn't feel any pain in my body for a few minutes, or I saw colors, or whatever it is that people experience when they're in that liminal place, they can have a sense of what it is and how it feels so that they can say, oh, okay, this is why I'm going to show up again and again. Maybe after the sound bath tomorrow, I'll listen to a 5 minute recording so I can tap back in to that experience. Does that make sense? Because I kind of think about it like when you begin a meditation practice, it is kind of like digging a well almost. And so you show up and you, not that
yeah.
Who in 2023 has ever dug a well, but you know, but you know what I'm talking about. So you go and you dig and you dig and it's dirt, and then you dig and you dig and it's dirt, and then you dig again and it's dirt.
Yeah.
And one day, maybe after many days, you get to water. But then once you get to water, once you kind of tap in, it's kind of easier to keep it flowing. That's what I would equate. So in a sound bath, that people can kind of feel that experience of water so that it's easier for them to show up again.
Mm-hmm. You know? So my experience with meditation was also kind of pushed to the edge. And then you kind of realize, okay, I need to get a hold of things. And this is something that could possibly help me relax and, you know, control my emotions a little bit so that I can kind of deal with it in a better way. But I was lucky enough to see my parents and my grandparents or people around me doing meditation and yoga and those kind of things too, and see that they have seen benefits from it. What are the kind of people that come to you? Are they also kind of people who reach this point where they're like, okay, I need something to help me right now? Or is it people who are just curious about meditation? Is that, I don't know what the feel for society is at this point. Like, are people more aware, or what are the kind of people that are doing sound healing?
I think it's both. I think it's a lot of people are becoming more and more curious about it. It's becoming more and more popular, mainstream. I think that really anyone on that spectrum can benefit from it, because if you have a meditative practice or you're practicing meditation in some way and you come to a sound bath, I feel that it can only kind of enhance your experience. And then simultaneously, if you have kind of an aversion to being still, or you feel like you've gotten to this point in your life where you have so much stress and anxiety and overwhelm that you say, all right, I need something, I'll try anything, even this weird, you know, sound bath thing, you know, then there are those people too, you know. And I think that more often than not, I have a very mixed group of people in front of me. So even when I'm facilitating trainings, you know, teaching other people how to facilitate sound experiences, I get all different types of people. People who have been moved and curious by the experience, who maybe want to facilitate. I get people who are already facilitating sound baths, but just kind of want to learn new perspectives, new ways of seeing. I get classically trained musicians. I get psychiatrists and psychologists who want another tool to add into their practice. I get school teachers, all different types of people.
Do you have any particular story of, you know, one person or a couple of experiences where people have seen a drastic improvement in the way after a particular class?
Fortunately, I have experienced a lot. And so I'm just going through like, which story should I share right now? Because it really, every time I am still, after all these years, amazed at witnessing people, the shift in people, the shift that people have, the transformation, you know, just from start to finish of one experience, to see how the face changes,
yeah,
to see how the muscles of the face, the eyes are more relaxed. So every time my mind is blown that it's so effective, you know, so quickly. And even going into these experiences, and I know the effectiveness, still to witness it happening in another person is really powerful. One really special story is that this woman going through a cancer treatment was experiencing a lot of pain and discomfort in her body, would tell me that when listening to my recordings during her treatments, she could kind of transcend those sensations in her body, that for a moment she didn't feel pain, you know, when listening to the sound. And so that is one effect and benefit that is really powerful to me, that it can help to shift relationship to pain and discomfort, even if it's just for a moment, to shift the focus, you know, away, that it can really be beneficial in recovery, you know, from disease, from injury, from emotional things, you know, anxiety and stress. And what I notice, just so I can kind of touch on a lot of different stories at one time, is that when people realize how sound is impacting them all the time, like in day-to-day life, when a helicopter goes by or a siren, an ambulance goes by, or a baby is crying, or your phone is alerting you, and how sounds really have the ability to trigger us or soothe us, or make us happy, bring joy, or help us to go to sleep. And when people realize that power of sound, that sound has on us, and that it's happening all the time in our lives, then you can leave the sound bath and take that knowledge of your relationship to sound and how different sound affects you, and you can start to apply it to different aspects of your life.
So that's very interesting.
How you relate to sound is how you relate to everything. So I'd say, and then I say that how you listen is how you live. So in a sound bath, it's sort of like a metaphor or a microcosm for like what sound is coming up and how are you responding or reacting to it? And can you slow that down to be able to shift your reactivity?
A personal story from my side. My 18-month-old is a very, very light sleeper. and any little sound wakes her up right from when she was born. So now I have this white noise machine that plays in the room while she sleeps, and I'm sitting next to her with bated breath, hoping that there's no loud sound outside. So my sensitivity to sound now has gone through the roof. Like any little somebody sneezing or, you know, like dishes in the kitchen or the pressure cooker in the kitchen really has become so. And I think it's the relationship that I have with those particular sounds and her not sleeping and me wanting her to sleep that makes me have this negative reaction now. Earlier, I wouldn't care with, you know, like there would be sounds that would irritate my husband. He's partially sighted. So his sense of hearing is a lot more stronger. And there were a lot of sounds that would irritate him. And I'm like, why is that bothering you so much? But now that I have this relationship with these sounds, it's become so loud and in my face that I don't necessarily know how to have that relationship with sound anymore. You know, if we're talking about it in that sense. I don't know if it's a good thing, bad thing, how to kind of work with it, or I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing it out there.
Yeah, no. This is really good because it's personal. And I think that other people will find this helpful too. First of all, you said, is it a good thing, bad thing? And for me, I feel like neither and both, because it's all information. And maybe you can look at it like, wow, what an amazing experience that you're going through with your daughter, and shifting your sensitivity to sound is also helping you maybe to be more empathetic to your husband and how he experiences sound. And isn't that interesting? You know, like that, this is how I would approach it. Like, yes, this is interesting. Also, remembering that when babies are in the womb, they're experiencing constant sound. The flow of your blood, your heartbeat, your digestive system, you know, all of these sounds are constantly surrounding them. And this is one of the reasons why babies, you know, need to be bounced and constant movement and to be, you know, soothed like that, because this is their first experience of always being in sound, of always being in movement. And then you kind of take them out and you're like, okay, be quiet. Like, wait, what? I'm like out of my safe place where there was all this movement and all of this sound. And, you know, and so I think that that's a common thing for babies too, to want constant sound or constant movement to feel safe and to feel soothed, you know.
So yeah. Very interesting. How can people kind of do this in terms of a practice? Is it something that people can do at home? I did see that you had like a little album on Spotify when I was, you know, kind of doing my research for the podcast, and I saw that you had one called Awake, I think it was. Can people just kind of open up one of the songs? Can I call it a song? And listen to it? Or is it, how can somebody who's never practiced it kind of take it up?
Yes. So I have many recording, and I would call them recordings rather than songs, because I think a song, typically there's a little bit more structure, like a chorus and a verse or something like that. And this is a different type of sound. And I do have lots of recordings available on the internet. And I also have a subscription on my website on sarahoster.com, where I put new videos. Some of them are guided. So some of them have me speaking and guiding in and out. And some are just sound. People sometimes like that for sleep. Sometimes I guide in to the experience and then leave. People like that for sleep too. And I'm currently in the process of, you know, shifting all of this over to an app. So, you know, it is my desire to make these practices really available to people. So when they come to an in-person sound experience and they want to be able to continue the practice, that there are ways that they can do that on their own. I have a bunch of recordings with Audible that are available, all different lengths. And so I think if somebody's curious, recording is a good place to start. But knowing that being in person is, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Ikibi podcast. If you are enjoying listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikibi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode.
So can you tell us a little bit about, apart from your website, where can people follow you and kind of follow the work that you do?
Yeah, I am Sarah Oster, pretty much everywhere. I don't have any kind of like nickname or anything. So yeah, my website is sarahoster.com. On Instagram, S-A-R-A-A-U-S-T-E-R, Sarah Oster. And I share short little videos every week, and announcements about trainings and different retreat and workshop and event experiences. So those are the best places.
Lovely. My last question to you is about your thoughts on where we're headed in terms of global health and wellness, and how essential are these practices for the future, keeping in mind the current state of the world, and how important is something like this?
I believe that these practices are imperative for our survival. And in a lot of ways, the tragedies, you know, of the pandemic moving in 2020 really brought much more awareness to mental and emotional health, mm-hmm. which I'm grateful for, because a lot more people are talking about it and aware of it. Yes, there is so much suffering in the world, and there always has been. We just now, with the internet and having a world of information in our pocket, are able to access so much more suffering at any given moment. And we are not psychologically, physiologically designed to be able to receive and handle all the suffering of the world. And so we need tools like meditation, like breathing practices, like being able to connect, have some human connection, you know, with each other for our survival. And so I see it as, you know, the growth of the popularity of these practices is it's necessary. And I think that more and more people are looking to these tools as, you know, not only just to like de-stress or relax, but to cope, you know, with everything that's going on. And so, yeah, I think that the more ways that people can tap into that, to have conversations that like that are open and vulnerable, we can support each other, you know, through these experiences, through coming together, through practices of listening, you know, through getting quiet and getting still, that these are all ways that we can move forward, that we can access, you know, feelings of hope, you know, over despair. Right? It's like perfect that we're talking on Diwali also, because it's like, you know, light over darkness and, you know, knowledge over ignorance and, you know, all these things like can only be accessed if we can just slow down a little bit and get quiet.
I love that. Do you have any other final words for our listeners who have the right intentions of wanting to do this more for themselves and for living more fuller and mindful lives? But sometimes life comes in the way and you don't know how to begin. Do you have any advice for us to kind of use these practices or to kind of have it in our schedule for the day?
Yes. And it's going to be very easy to remember because it's the three E's. So I say effort, ease, and every day. So the effort part is you have to show up. You have to, like, you can't just expect like it's just going to happen. You have to show up. But the ease, I would say, is you setting a timer on your phone for 1 minute right when you get up and just sit on the edge of your bed with your eyes closed and focus on your breath. It can be easy. It doesn't have to be a big deal. You don't have to have a special cushion or place, or it can be easy. But then every day, because it's cumulative, because mm-hmm. in a week you might say, I really like that minute when I wake up and I focus on my breath. I think I want to make it 2 minutes. You know, I think I want to wake up like 10 minutes earlier so I can have 5 minutes, you know, and you start to kind of carve out a little bit of a bigger window in your day because you're making it a priority. So I think sometimes people make it harder than it needs to be, and that becomes overwhelming, and then you can't stick with it. Mm-hmm. So the effort isn't just showing up, because it's as simple as that. Keep it easy enough that you can stick with it every day.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Sarah, for having this conversation with us today. I am very excited for our listeners to kind of listen in and explore the idea of sound bathing. It sounds so exciting. And I personally listened to one today and I really, really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikibi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikibi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikibi.